week I went a little out of order, accidentally. Last week was supposed to be primarily a focus on the mystery man that Yaakov had a fight with, and this week was supposed to be about why Esav is considered a Rasha and about Esav's death. Okay, so I touched on Esav's death last week, but we didn't look into it at all. So what we're going to do today is we're going to look into it in much greater detail. Okay, in much greater detail. So the two pages which I gave you here are one which has a translation of some of the sources, and the other one is an older shir that I gave on the same subject, which went, as you see from the title, a biblical Talmudic and Midrashic tapestry. This shir, this class is morning Midrash, so it's focused on Midrash. Mm-hmm. But I want to give you in greater detail the other sources so that you see how this develops. Okay, so but I'm going to be jumping back and forth between the two pages so that you see how this works. Okay, so if you look at the very top of the page that says the death of Esav, a biblical Talmudic and Midrashic tapestry, you'll see a pasuk. Okay, the pasuk says, "Vayigva Yitzchak." This is in Parshas Vayishlach. Vayigva Yitzchak, vayyamas, vayosef elamav. That Yitzchak died, and of course the term gevia is an interesting phrase, which is used primarily actually, it's not only used with people who we assume to be tzaddikim. I think it's also used in the context of Yishmael, and it's also used in the context of people dying in the flood. So to say that gevia is only with tzaddikim is an interesting, you know, is a hard sell when you look at the totality of the Torah. But anyway, vayyosef alamav, he's gathered to his nation, zakenu sivayamim, right, old, filled with days, vayikruo so Esav Yaakov enough. And then he's buried by Esav and Yaakov. That is the last time Esav appears in the Torah. Okay? Except that immediately after that, we're told the toldos Esav, the generations of Esav in the immediately following chapter. That's the end of chapter 35. Esav's genealogy is chapter 36. And then if you want to say that that's the last time Esav appears in the Torah, it's not really Esav appearing, it's more just his family tree. Okay? So, In that light, we're going to look at the sources on the Esav's death morning midrash page, which has, if you look, you know, just compare, it's source number 2 and source number 3, and the midrash Tehillim, which is on the back, source number 18. Okay, so the only benefit of this page is that it's in English. Okay. So that's what we have here. This original did not have an English. Okay, so we're going to go through this in the interest of time. We'll use the English, and then afterwards we'll go back to the other sources to look at the bigger picture of Esav dying. But I want to follow the format of the all Hebrew page. Okay, but sources 2 and 3 on that page are the first two sources on the with the Hebrew and the English. Okay, so the first is the Gemara in Sota. The Gemara in Sota says the following. Esav said to them, produce a document. Okay, so what's the background? Now, probably the most common view as to when Esav died follows Yaakov's death. Where does that come from? It comes from Yikirvu Yimei Evel Avi V'arga Esachi. Okay, which we're going to get to in a few minutes, that when Rivka at one point, but when Esav is upset at Yaakov over having taken the bracha, Esav makes a promise that when my father dies, I'm going to kill my brother. And Rivka comes along and she says, why should I lose you both on the same day? And, you know, and so the assumption is that when Yaakov dies, Esav is going to die because of what Rivka's prophecy was, that they would both die on the same day. So Yaakov's dead and he's about to be buried. And this is what the Gemara says. The Gemara tells us a story. Esav says to them, meaning to Yaakov's family, produced the document. They want to bury Yaakov in Maris Machpelah, and Esav comes along and he says, wait a second, you don't have a place in Maris Machpelah. What are you talking about? Of course, it's Yaakov, son of Yitzchak. He says, I'm also son of Yitzchak. And Yaakov used his burial plot already, right? He gave it to his wife, Leah. Leah's been buried here. That was Yaakov's spot. There's one spot left, it's mine. So they said, no, we have a deed. It was given to him from Yitzchak. You were, you know, you're written out. That's where the Gemara begins here. Esav said, produce the document. They said, it's in Egypt. So who went to get it? Naphtali, who was swift as a deer. Chushim, the son of Dan, was hard of hearing. He says, what's the delay? We're waiting for Naphtali, was the response. And until Naphtali arrives, our grandfather is going to lay here, unburied, in a state of disgrace. He hit Esav on the head, causing his death, to expedite Yaakov's burial. At that moment, Rivka's prophecy was fulfilled. Why should I lose the two of you in the same day? And even though their deaths were not on the same day, their burials were. What do you mean their deaths were not on the same day? Yaakov had died at least 70 days earlier, right? There was 70 days of mourning in Egypt, and then whatever time it took to travel from Egypt to here, that's so Yaakov's been dead for a few months. Okay, but they were buried on the same day. So that's the Gemara's answer to the question of Rivka assuming that they're going to die on the same day. Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer has a slightly different version of the story. It says, when they arrive at the cave, Esav came from Mount Horeb to argue and say, the burial plot in this cave is mine. Yosef sent a message to Egypt to bring a counterproof. Chushim, son of Dun, was deaf. He took his sword and cut off Esav's head, which rolled into the cave. Okay, I mean, he has a similar kind of, in the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, if you look in the middle, you'll see him saying, well, you know, what are we waiting here for? Ma'anachnu Yoshin Kan. And they say it's Esav, and so he says, "Bishvil Aisha Zeh she'ena maniach son of the Boris Yaakov." That's the guy. That's the reason why. So if you look in the fifth line from the bottom, in the Hebrew, "Shalaf Ascharbo v'Hetis Es Rosh Hashal Esav." So he took his sword and cut off Esav's head, which rolled into the cave. They sent his body back to Seir for burial, but Yitzchak took his head and prayed over it. Let this Rosh rest in peace. Okay. Now again, that's another interesting idea. What does that even mean? Yitzchak is dead. So Esav's head is somehow being cradled by Yitzchak, and Yitzchak's rocking it and saying, "Oh, my son." I mean, okay. So I'm sure I'd like to say, you know, I don't want to be 1,000% sure, but I'm sure that there is a deeper meaning to that narrative than to say that this is what's taking place. Right? There's a lot of stories about people going down to Tamaras Machpelah and seeing, you know, dead people alive. I mean, I don't really know what any of that stuff means. But, okay, that's the tale you have in Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, suggesting not that Chushim merely killed Esav, but that he knocked off his head, and that's how Esav died. And Esav got a merit that his head remains in there. Okay, whatever that means. Okay, now, we're not going to go into Midrash Tehillim. Let's go back to the other page. Death of Esav, Biblical Talmudic Midrash and Tapestry. Let's look at source number 4. Okay, so this is what I mentioned before. This is the background to Esav's plan, the prophecy of concern regarding that Yaakov will be killed. Okay, where Esav says, look at the two psukim in bold, when he gets mad at Yaakov, he says, Vayomer Esav libo, Yikrivu yimei evel aviv argo asachi. Esav says, when my father dies, I'm going to kill my brother. And Rivka finds out about it, and Pasuk Mem Hey. She says, Rivka says that when the time comes, your brother kind of forgets, then I'll send for you and I'll get you back, because I don't want to lose both of you on the same day. Okay? So, now, the question is, if this in fact is true, that what Rivka is assuming is that Yaakov and Esav are going to die on the same day. So, owing to the way that the Gemara explains the it's referring to the burial of Yaakov and Esav. So we have to assume that Esav is at Yaakov's funeral. So take a look at source number 5 over there, Rashi. Rashi says, one of the brachos that Yaakov gives to Saint Imre Shefer, which one is that? Okay, it's the bracha to Naftali, where he says, "Al Yadam Sharu Dvoro Ubarak Shira." Right, through these Imre Shefer, these beautiful sayings, Dvora and Barak were able to sing a song. Rabbi Sanu Darshu Al Yom Kuras Yaakov Kishir Esav Alami Arab Mesechasota. Right, that it's referring to. The rabbis said that it's referring to the day of Yaakov's burial, when Esav was getting in the way of the burial at the cave, so Naftali was involved. So we saw Naftali was involved according to the Gemara in Sota. Next, the Ramban says.
So let me ask this.
Sure.
So if this would not have happened, what could have Rivka been referring to?
We're going to get to it. Okay, the Ramban. Number 6, he says, "V'dachin sharamaz lehem be'amro v'shama kavarti esleya shekvar echazigu b'me'ara." That when Yaakov says to his sons in Parshas Vayechi, he says, "I buried Leah there." He's saying that is Yaakov saying that I own the rights to the cave. When I buried Leah, I basically set my roots there. And this was basically to set the wheels rolling in his kid's head that Esav and Esav's descendants have no claim. He can't come along and say Esav is a bechor, and that he's the one who is worthy to be buried there. Meaning Yaakov went somewhere else, but it's his by all rights. You know, Ramban is referring to Esav, that Esav should not be able to say that because he's the Bechor and he's the one who is worthy to be buried there, even though he's living somewhere else, that you know, that they should also bring him the same way that Yaakov's sons are going to be bringing him. Because Esav is going to want to be buried with his fathers, his holy fathers, and to be with them united in burial. And if Esav is buried there, Yaakov won't be buried there. The fact of the matter is that Esav has created his own family. Yaakov has created his own family, and so you know they just can't share a burial ground. That's what Yaakov says to his sons. He says, "In the grave that I had prepared, basically, I buried Leah and I dug my own grave. So, you know, that's the end of the story." He's suggesting that this is one of the reasons why, when Yaakov is brought up, he's accompanied by soldiers from Egypt to make sure that law and order is maintained. That's Josephus. He says, "Vizu asam sifrei kabbalistik ba sifu ben Eliphaz ben Esav asimaim ktata al ze." Right? He says that sifo ben Eliphaz, so ben Esav, Esav's grandson, made a big to do. Ad she'orchu milchama v'tigaver yad Yosef safsu am mivuchar gedudav. So Yosef's people overpowered Esav's people. And they captured a bunch of them. Ve'viyum le'mitzrayim, and he brought them down to Egypt. Yamad sham betfisa kol yemei Yosef, and they were imprisoned all the days of Yosef. And he says that's how Esav became Rome, because they escaped from Egypt and went across the Mediterranean Sea and ended up in Italy.
Who is he referring to
specifically? Who, Ramban?
Yeah, I mean, who is he saying?
He's saying it was grandchildren of Esav who were captured by Yosef. Yeah, and whoever was with him. And he said that's how you get Esav in Rome. Because otherwise, the argument of how Esav becomes Esav, which is Edom, which is east of the Jordan River, becomes Rome. When we talk about Eretz Edom, or not Eretz Edom, when we talk about Galus Edom, we talk about the Galus of Rome. Yeah. So he says that's how you get a descendant of Esav into Rome. And all it takes is one guy, right? Just as Haman could be one guy who's a descendant from Agag, right? Agag was one guy who was spared by Shaul, and there you go. That's how you can have a nation. Okay? Now the real question is, how did Esav know that Yaakov was about to be buried? It seems pretty coincidental. Esav is parked outside of Esav is parked right outside of Maras Machpelah waiting for Yaakov to show up after Yaakov's been living in Egypt for 17 years. I mean,
but 70 days of mourning does give him some leeway.
Okay, fair enough. But again, how would Esav get that information? I don't know. I mean, there weren't telegrams.
Well, you know, there was a lot of trading going on.
Fine. Okay, fair enough. So we can give an answer, but we can also still say that there's a question. We don't know for sure. Okay, so the Targum Yonatan says the following. This is a Hebrew translation that the Bar-Ilan program provides. Vayesu oso banav le'eretz shel Kanan, v'nishma davar le'esav ha'rasha. That when they were traveling, and maybe that's what it was, right, there's a whole to-do. Remember, right, one of the things, actually, it's actually not so far-fetched at all, if you actually read what the Pesukim say. When the Torah describes the journey that Yaakov's family takes to accompany him to Egypt, it actually says that they go around and they cross over the Jordan. Okay? And people are watching and they say, Evel Kaved Zel Mitzrayim, that they seem to follow, I mean, a path that would be similar to the one that the B'nai Israel are going to take later on when they're after they leave Egypt. That they go through the Negev.
That's a long way?
Yeah. They go through the Negev, right, across.
What would be the purpose of going the long way at that
time? That is a great question. What would be the purpose of doing that? So one thing is for... So there are a few purposes. Rabbi David Foreman has, in his Aleph Beta, it's a very fascinating, I think it's a Pesach Shir, where he talks about how Yaakov's going to Egypt, being accompanied by Rechev Uparashim of Paro, and they're being escorted to the Jordan to cross over. And they're being seen by the nations of Canaan, who are saying, Evel Kaved Zeh LeMitzrayim, this is a huge mourning for Egypt. And therefore, they don't attack because their first assumption is to see, oh, look at all this army that's accompanying what's going on over here. Are they coming to attack? And then they realize that it's a funeral. They don't attack. And what happens later on, when at the time of the Exodus, when Egypt is pursuing, and what do we say in the Shira? Namogu kol yoshvei Canaan. That all the Canaanites are watching, somehow they're standing at the side of the sea when the Egyptians are being drowned. And he says, yeah, what was supposed to happen is that the Egyptians, at the time of the Exodus, were supposed to copy the model of what took place over here, in that you accompany the Bnei Yisrael back to Canaan. That's what you're supposed to do. And you accompany them with Rechev Uparashim, right? Horses, chariots, but it's peaceful. And you're showing that this is the right, this is the correct journey. And Rabbi Foreman does not mention this, and I've tried to get him to amend it. He makes videos. But who are the Bnei Israel accompanying when they're going out of Egypt? They're taking Yosef, which is just, it should look exactly like what happened here. Okay, but it doesn't. But the point is that when they go, the point that I'm trying to make though, is that when they go across and they end up, in order for them to get up to the Jordan River, right, think of it, if this is the Negev, so that means the Jordan is over here. Here's the Dead Sea. Jordan, right? Kinneret. So they have to go through the Negev, and then around the Dead Sea, and now they're in Edom territory. Okay, so Edom would know about it, right? They would know about it, because that's where they're going. And then they cross over the Jordan, and they get there.
Why did they go that way?
Right. Why did they go that way? Why did they go that way later on also? I mean, this is what God wanted. They wanted to make a cross the Jordan spectacle. I mean, there's. I'm sure there's a lot of Torah on it. Anyway, so v'nishma devar le'ez v'rosh v'yisa mehar shel gavla b'chelos gdolim v'yavol l'chevron v'lo ya'ozev li'osef l'gvar saviv. So Esav saw it. He said, all right, guys, boys, let's go. And they come to Hebron, and he's not leaving Yosef. He's not letting Yosef. And then he goes on to tell the story about Naftali goes back and to get the deed, etc. And then in his version, Chushim ben Dan. Look, if you look smack in the middle of this whole thing, Ramaz Chushim ben Dan. Chushim knocked off Esav's head, and it's rolling until it ended up in Yitzchak's lap. And similar to what we saw in the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, so he gives the coordinates of how Yaakov was able to be buried there.
At that point.
I don't know. I like to think of it you ever see that Romeo and Juliet movie? Romeo and Juliet, so they're buried in some kind of like underground cave, okay, where they're laid down on some kind of slab,
right?
Okay, unburied, and then a year later the family would come back and they would gather the bones and just put it in a kuch in the wall, So that's the idea, that they're just laid out there and whatever. Nobody ever came in the meantime. So now we have to just come to grips with. Is this the only perspective? Because either way you have it, what we've seen so far is either that Esav is killed by Chushim, just stam, and his body is left intact, or he knocks his head off. Okay? To fulfill what Rivka said, that they're going to die, or at least, as the Gemara says, be buried in the same day. But I have a new idea. A new idea. And the new idea is that Rivka was not saying that you, Esav, and Yaakov are going to die in the same day. Okay? Let's go back. Okay, as I mentioned, that there are 70 days. Look, if you turn over the page, you see in source number 8, the pasuk says that there are 40 days for embalming, and they cry 70 days. So I've never been clear on if they are crying during the embalming, and if it's altogether 70 days, or if it's 40 days of embalming, and then 70 days. Okay. In either case, we're talking about a long time. It's at least 2.5 months, right? And then, or 2 1/3 months. If not 100, right? If it's either 70 days or 110 days. And if it's 110 days, we're talking about, that's already almost 4 months. Okay?
In any case, there was no urgency on that at that point to bury him?
Apparently not.
I can see that.
Right.
The question is, why?
Well, they're embalming, they're preserving the body, so the main thing is that Yosef needs to have a chance to mourn, and then he needs to be able to get permission from Paro to be able to. So maybe Yosef needed to work some kind of magic. The first people that he goes to, he doesn't go directly to Paro. He goes to base Paro. You have to read the psukim. You see, it's right here actually. Yeah. I mean, come on, Yosef, you can't talk to. You have been so close to Paro all these years. You can't go over to him and ask him yourself. So Rabbi Foreman also goes into that. Right, it's a big ask, but Yaakov had given him.
The custom in Mitzrayim was to, because it says also Mitzrayim should.
Right. I mean, of course, Yaakov could have also been viewed as a big dude, and that would also contribute to why everything is prolonged. Okay, but now we have to ask ourselves the following question. If we look at Rivka's prophecy regarding you two dying on the same day, so take a look at what Rashi says. Rashi says, "God, lama eshkal gam shnechem biyom echad." So we saw the psukim right on the bottom of the previous page, in source number 4. So here, Rashi says, "Im yakum alacha ve'atat argenu yandu banavi argucha." Right? If he goes against you and you end up killing him, his kids are going to kill you. Ruach HaKodesh nizrak above and his navash of yamachad yamusu kamosh v'forsh v'parakam v'kana l'ishto. So she had an air of prophecy, a wave of prophecy, and she saw that they're going to die on the same day. Okay? Even though the Gemara says they didn't die on the same day, obviously, but they were buried on the same day. Okay. Ibn Ezra says, Lama eshkal pachada shema yaharog zezeh. Right? She was afraid that they were going to kill each other. Right? Basically, they'll pull a duel. Each one's going to take 10 paces. They'll shoot, and they're both going to hit, and they'll both die as a result of the wounds. Or they're both going to do a sword duel, and they'll both get the last fatal blow at the same moment. Okay? Oh, yargu im yarog oschav yesh drash b'yom echad meisu shneihem. There's a drash that they died on the same day. Okay, that drash does not really follow with what the Gemara says. Okay, so we'll leave that. Rashbam says im yarog oschav gam hu yareg al yedigo al adam. Right? That if one of you kills the other one, then the other one's descendants will get the other one back. Okay? But look at the Chizkuni. I love this. Except for his cop-out. Okay, I love it except for his cop-out. Lameshkal Gam Shnechem Yom Chad, he says, Rivka says, why should I lose both of you on the same day, the two of you on the same day? She says, Avicha V'yatar. Remember what Esav had said? Yikirvu Yimei Evel Avi. When my father dies, I'm going to kill my brother. The day my father dies, I'm going to kill my brother. So what's Rivka saying? There's not going to be any defense. Esav's going to pull a sucker punch on you. You're not even going to see it coming. Esav's going to kill you. So I'm going to lose your father and you. Shara Esav mar yigru me'ebel avi. Nim sashi Yitzchak meis, Esav yarog is Yaakov. That when Yitzchak dies, Esav is planning to kill Yaakov. And then I will be bereft of both of them, my husband and my son. Now, by the way, we know, remember what Rivka said? We saw this before. Rivka said, when the time comes and your brother forgets what he said, I'll call you back to come home. Does Rivka call Yaakov back? No, Rivka doesn't call Yaakov. Yaakov decides to come back because he's done with Lavan, like enough's enough. Okay, he decides to come back. Does he ever see his mother again? Well, as far as we know, no, because by the time he comes back, she's dead. And so he sees Yitzchak, Rivka. There's no way that Rivka can lose them both because Rivka's not around anymore. But that's the concern. What does the Chizkuni say? V'yayikar k'deperish Rashi. He says, that's what I think. I think that Rivka's talking about Yitzchak and Yaakov on the same day, but Rashi's right. Come on, Chizkuni.
Take a stand, man.
V'gam asa l'rabos es Rivka l'markish t'yayish k'ulam b'mena, arei yu chashuva k'mesa. that if she loses both of her sons, she may as well be dead because she lost her sons. Okay? And then he also notes, even though they didn't die on the same day, clearly. However, they were buried on the same day, as the Gemara in Masechta Sota says. Okay? Now, I thought of the Chizkuni's idea, and then I found it in the Chizkuni. So for me, it was like when I discovered this, it hit me. And I thought it was just a huge Chiddush, and then I found the Chizkuni, and I also saw it somewhere else, but I don't remember where. But it was something not, I don't want to say obscure, but not as common to be learned, because it's not, just like the Chizkuni is not in most Mikros Gedolos Chumashes. The Nitziv is not in most Mikros Gedolos, it's not in any Mikros Gedolos Chumash. It may have been the Ralbag, I don't remember. But I saw it somewhere else. Anyway, so this is the this is my proof. Whom does Rivka love? Vayevyeh Yitzchak ha'ola Sarah imo. Right, when Yitzchak marries Rivka, vayeh aveh. Yitzchak loves Rivka, and presumably that love is returned. Okay? There's a love between Yitzchak and Rivka. Vayehav Yitzchak as Esav, kitzai b'fiv, Rivka ha'evas as Yaakov. Now, am I going to say that Rivka doesn't love Esav? I don't know. He's her son. So I have to assume that she loved him. But when it came to just the way that these parents played favorites, for better or for worse, the Torah tells us Rivka ha'evas as Yaakov. It doesn't say Vayehav Yitzchak ve'Rivka, Vayehavu Yitzchak ve'Rivka as Esav ve'as Yaakov. Doesn't say that. I mean, that would seem to be something which we would assume to be obvious. But it does tell us that there is a favoritism of some kind that Yitzchak displays towards Esav and that Rivka displays towards Yaakov. But when you start combining the love that Rivka has in her life, at least from the Torah's evidence, it seems clear that Rivka's love is towards her husband, and Rivka's love is towards her son Yaakov. Okay? So now, we have to understand that there is maybe something else going on here, and that the Midrash, which we've been seeing up until now, is not as clear as we thought. That Gemara and that Midrash maybe is not the only view that's out there. So take a look at sources numbers 15 and 16. Okay, these are both in the Yerushalmi. One is in Maseches Ksubos, Aleph, Halacha Hey, and the other one is in Yerushalmi Gittin, Hey, Halacha Zayin. So the first one says the following. Ha'okhle Yitzchama Rishana Gazru Shmad B'Yehuda Shekein Maseres Lam Yavosim Shehuda Haragas Esav Tichsiv Yarecha Ba'orif Ayvecha. Essentially what it's saying, I believe, is that Esav wanted to wipe out Yehuda first and foremost, meaning the family of Esav later on, because Yehuda had killed Esav. Okay? As the Pasuk says, Yarecha Ba'orif Ayvecha, that your hand is against the neck of your enemy. Next, Ha'yisakrikin b'Yehuda, Rishon ha'gaz r'shmar al Yehuda, sh'kei meseras b'yadam y'avazim, Yehuda ha'ragas Esav, d'chsev Yarecha Ba'orif Ayvecha. Okay, so it's the same line, essentially, that these two passages in the Yerushalmi have, which are describing this idea that Yehuda killed Esav. Now, that's pretty contradictory to what we saw before, right? Because the other one, not only does it not say that it's Yehuda, it says it's not one of the Shvatim, it's not one of Yaakov's sons, it's one of Yaakov's grandsons. Mm-hmm. And who's the grandson? Chushim ben Dan. It was Meitzach. I mean, what's the connection of Chushim ben Dan? And why, where is this Kabbalah that Yehuda was the one who did it? Okay? The pasuk which is quoted in Midrash Tehillim is this pasuk regarding what it means to confront the enemy at the Orif. Okay, so that's Midrash Tehillim, and that gets us back to our translation on the other page. Okay, here we go. Midrash Tehillim 18. My enemy is on my neck. This verse, that's the pasuk which I just gave you, in number 17, Shmuel Beis, Parakhav Beis, pasuk Mem Aleph, which I believe is from the Shira of David, if I'm not mistaken. That must be the Shira of David. David's Shira, after he, at the end of the second book of Shmuel. This verse refers to Yehuda. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says there is a tradition that Yehuda killed Esav. When? At Yitzchak's funeral. Esav, Yaakov, and the 12 tribes went to bury him. The Pasuk says that Esav and Yaakov were there. They went to bury him. They were all crying in the cave. The tribes, in other words, Yaakov's sons, went out to give their father respect, and Esav went in to seize an opportunity. Now I will kill him as I promised when my father dies. Nistakel Yehuda saw this. He followed and realized that Esav planned to kill his father. He followed. He saw Esav poised to kill, and he killed him from behind. Why? Because he did not want to kill Esav from the front, because he looked like Yehuda's father. Okay, now this is not to say that they were identical twins, but you don't have to be identical twins to be siblings who look like one another. Okay, I mean, there are some siblings, all the kids have the same face, right? Even though they're different ages. This is why Yaakov blessed him, Yadcha Ba'arif Avecha, your hand is on the back of the neck of your enemy. Okay, so that's a midrash, another midrash, conflicting midrash, describing Esav's death at the time of Yitzchak's funeral. Okay, and the next source on the back is the last source here, number 19, which is just the Yaakov Shimoni, who actually records both views, both opinions, the one which we saw in the Gemara in Sota and the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, and also the one in Midrash Tehillim. He just puts them side by side. It's the only source that I've seen. I'm sure there might be others, but it's the only source that I've seen that actually put them both, one right next to the other, and is basically saying, you decide. But that, I just want to bring us back to the very first point. And the very first point is the pasuk in the end of Parshas, towards the end of Parshas Vayishlach, which is Vayigva Yitzchak Vayamas Vayasev Elamav Zakenus Vayamim Vayikvuru Aso Esav Yaakov Banav. That when it tells us about the death of Yitzchak, it tells us the last appearance Esav has, and what's the kicker? The kicker is that immediately after that, we're told about Esav's genealogy and his descendants, and we have a different kind of tradition that when a person's genealogy is recorded, it's usually at the time of their death. We have that certainly with Yishmael at the end of Parshas Chayisara. Okay, we have it with, we kind of have it with Abraham. I mean, Abraham doesn't have so many descendants by the time he's dead, but we hear about Abraham's six sons from Keturah. We're immediately told at the very beginning of the next parsha, Ela told us Yitzchak about Abraham. Abraham alluded to Yitzchak right after Abraham's death is recorded. We have it from Adam until Noah, from Noah until Terach. They're all their deaths are recorded as their genealogy, whatever genealogy, even though in most cases it's one person, then Vayolad, Banim, Vanos, you have other children. But the idea is that when a person's genealogy is recorded in the Torah, it's usually at the same time as their death. Okay? And so I leave you with this question. Which midrash is correct? Which one do you find more compelling? Okay? I mean, I think I've made it clear which one I find more compelling. Okay? I like the Yehuda version in self-defense, not in self-defense, in preservation of his father, which is a kind of defense or self-defense, versus the Chushim one, which to me is just extremely troubling. The idea that, oh, he's getting in the way of our burying Yaakov. Let me kill him. I mean, it doesn't really flow. So I hope that in just showing you this kind of what I call a midrashic tapestry, you get a different kind of appreciation of how little hints in psukim can be utilized to create a narrative, or maybe to rebuild the building blocks of a narrative that's missing, so that we can get a bigger picture. Does it matter when Esav died? I don't know that it really matters. I don't think it has an impact on history. I don't think it has an impact on the story of the Jewish people. But I think that the idea of Rivka being concerned about the loss of her husband and her son on the same day, as opposed to who's to know when Yaakov and Esav are both going to die. I mean, I understand what all the commentaries say, that if you guys get into a fight, one's going to kill the other, and then the other one's, family is going to kill. I get it. I hear that. But who's to know that Rivka is actually going to live to see that day? Who knows? Who knows? And in fact, she doesn't, no matter which way you look at it, Rivka doesn't live to see that day, because she's gone, certainly by the time Yitzchak dies, and certainly by the time Yaakov dies. So, that's my take on the death of Esav. Okay?